The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today on the Patriots Talk podcast, Matt Castle dropping knowledge, stories, and lots of laughs. Followed by Phil Perry trading with me on three keys to the season opener. All that and more on Patriots Talk podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, with no further ado, let's bring in former Patriots, Chiefs, Titans, Bills. Close the Wikipedia page. Quarterback, Matt Castle. All right, all season long, we're going to have the great Matt Castle, longtime NFL quarterback. You know him best for his time here in 08. When he led the Patriots to an 11-5 record, Pro Bowl the next year, or maybe it was 2 years after, when he went to Kansas City, had 27 touchdowns, 7 picks, and he's been all over the place since. How you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. It's good to be on with you, buddy.
This is going to be great, but I think what I want to do is catch up with you a little bit because you were in the headlines recently, just briefly, as having had the Indianapolis Colts kick your particular tires, and that was before the retirement of Andrew Luck. Is that right?
You know what? That was right after the retirement of Andrew Luck. I got a call on Monday, and they said they wanted me to come to a workout on Tuesday. And I was like, you know what? Right now, I'm not doing anything, so I would love to come work out. So get out of the house for a day, took a trip up. I actually took a drive because there's no direct flights. We're actually in Nashville, so we took a direct drive up there about 5 hours, worked out, took a body fat test, which I was not anticipating. But it wasn't as bad
took
as
a body,
I thought it
what?
Was going to be. Body fat test. They actually made me do a body fat test. Thank God I was in somewhat decent shape. And other than that, everything went well. I loved my time meeting Frank and the GM, Chris Ballard, there. They're great people. And, you know, they obviously, when Hoyer came up on the market later on that weekend, I know that Frank had a relationship with him and they went that direction. So, yeah, it was bittersweet. But at the same time, it was good to get out back in the mix a little bit.
What is just an idiot's guide to a tryout? What do they put you through? They drove you in. Do they pay you mileage for that, I would hope?
You know what? I think they pay for everything. So, I mean, I would like to think so. I'm hoping I don't get the bill for the hotel room when I had to stay in that one night. But, you know, they get you up there. And this is honestly the first time in my entire career that I've ever had to actually go work out for a team and throw for a team. And it consisted of about 40 throws. And Frank Wright, you know, ran the show and asked us to do this, that, and the other, some movement drills. And then, like I said, after about 40 throws, they've got a group of guys out there that are watching you throw. And then after that, you go shower up, get a little breakfast, meet with everybody, and have a discussion. And onward we go.
Did they put you, like, on a board? Or do they say, okay, the guy's been kicking around the NFL for 14 years. He's pretty astute.
You know what? That was the fun part for me because, you know, at least when I've gone on free agency trips to places and stuff, normally you walk in and you meet people and they want to get to know you more on a personal level. But the fun part for me was I went in to Frank's office and he immediately got me up on the board and started asking me to draw up formations, defensive fronts, how would I attack this defensive scheme in terms of protection, draw up a man protection, draw up a slide protection. How would you deal with this issue if they're bringing, you know, a safety pressure and stuff like that? So that was actually one of the most entertaining parts for me was I love talking ball. I love being a part of that aspect of it. So that was part of it. And then like I said, after that, we watched a little bit of film. So that was different different experience for me, especially considering, like I said, most of these trips I've been on is a free agency deal where you're going in, looking at a facility, meeting coaches more on a personal level than you are actually talking X's and O's.
That's awesome. That's great insight. I really appreciate that because we don't generally know how the different things go. We hear a little bit some here and there, but that's fascinating. Now, just on the surface, the reason you were there was, you know, Luck's injury and then retirement. And right. In the context of what we're looking at with Tom Brady at 42, and I know how close you guys remain, it just underscores what an outlier he continues to be physically and what he has done to keep himself arm, shoulder, hips, leg, abs, you know, everything in top shape.
There's no doubt. I mean, it's incredible what he continues to do and how he pushes himself. And obviously, he's always been one of those guys that have been incredibly regimented in the off season. And I remember just even me being there, we were workout partners when I was there for 4 years, and just how he would always find different things to motivate himself. Because like I said, some of these, maybe I haven't said this, but you get into these workouts that become kind of mundane. You continue to do the same routine, but he would always find himself something to do, something to concentrate on, whether it was one off season, it was yoga, the other off season, it was boxing.
I remember the boxing.
Right. And so he's obviously would get beat up by half of the people in America. Well, let's say 75% of the people in America. He still can't box, but he'll tell you that he's Evander Holyfield or one of these guys. Right. But at the same time, it's just a
different
method.
Did you spar with him?
Huh? Oh, I'd kick his ass. Are you
kidding
me?
Really?
Let's be honest. No, I wouldn't spar with him. I'd get in trouble, probably release him.
Oh, that's a good point. No,
let's be honest. I was wrestling one time with him on the field, and I got a hold of him and got on top of him, and Rodney Harrison just started laying into me and said, "Don't do that ever again." I was like, "What?" Well, I was defending myself, right? But then the next thing I know, all these vets are coming up, Seymour and Harrison, and they're yelling at me like I was at fault. And I was like, "Wait a second, this isn't even right."
That's the favorite son. I know yeah, you got, exactly. I know you have multiple kids. That's the favorite son. You don't touch that one.
You don't touch that one. He's the golden boy. No, but, you know, and that's the most amazing part is, like I said, look, I'm 37 and I wake up and I'm like, gosh, something kind of always hurts for some reason. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I still keep in shape and do all that. But the hard part, like I said, sometimes as you get older, you have kids, you have more responsibility, is that consistent motivation to put yourself at that elite level. And he's always taken such pride in it and everything that he does. And it's incredible what he's still able to accomplish and do.
Do you think, and I don't want to belabor Tom here, we're not having you on every week to be, you know, Tom Brady conversations, but do you think that a motivation this year might be the fact that they were not able to get an extension to say, hey, we're fine with you playing until 43 or 44 or 45, like you've said. Do you think that might be a motivator in 2019?
It could be. You know what, like I said, he finds different ways to motivate himself. And, you know, I think the older that he has gotten, I'm sure that part of it is like showing everybody, like shutting everybody up. Like everybody's saying he's going to fall off. He's going to do this. And he's a guy that came in with a later round draft pick, and a guy that's always been self-motivated because he knows that, you know, especially, and I took the same mentality where I knew that as a later round draft pick, it was up to me to put my best foot forward each and every day and go out there and compete and show them that I belong. And I think he's never lost that mentality, which has helped create the player that he is today and continue to play at the elite level that he does.
I do want to ask you this because it's so interesting in contrast to Luck. How has Tom been protected? I think it's a combination of things, and I want to hear what your input is. How has he protected himself over the years from having these injuries, which waylay careers? You know, is it the scheme? Is it the offensive line and Dante? Is it his own great decision-making? What do you think is the biggest factor?
You know, that's a great question because the fact of the matter is you play for that long, inevitably, you know, there's 100% guarantee that you're going to get hurt if you played NFL football, right? And he's, for the most part, other than 2008, avoided those major injuries. Now, let's be honest, if you were to really go into it and dive into it, I'm sure that every season he's dealing with something that people don't know about, and he's just one of those tough sons of guns that gets up every day, enjoys what he does, and he's going to get through the week of work and get ready to go. And a lot of people probably don't know what everybody goes through on a weekly basis. And if he can play, he's going to play. And as he always told me, look, I never like seeing somebody else do my job. And that's always, that's kind of his mentality going into every season. So what's incredible about it is even through those, when he gets the bumps and bruises and the dings and this, that kind of thing, is how he can recover. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to how he takes care of himself and what he does throughout a weekly preparation to get himself ready for Sundays, because he knows Sundays is what counts and that's what he needs to be ready for.
All right, let's turn it back to Matt for a quick second here. So what are you doing now? You are in between jobs? Is that how you would phrase it if you saw somebody in the supermarket?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you get to this phase where you've played for 14 years and that's all you've really ever known. And then you get to an off season, which was obviously a strange off season, considering the fact that your body clock's telling you, hey, it's OTA time. Well, I mean, you got off season workouts, you do this. And then all of a sudden we get all the way to camp and nobody's really called or anything like that, which is fine. It just is, you know, it's different going through it for the first time in my career in which nobody's called and been like, hey, we need you. We want you here, this, that, and the other. So on the flip side of that, you know what? I've got five beautiful kids. I got to hang out with them and be around more this year than I ever have in the past 14. So that part of it was incredible. And at the same time, the transition's been tough, because I think for every person that leaves this game, the hardest transition is not having that locker room, that camaraderie, mm-hmm. the people that purpose that you go into work every day with something to accomplish. And so it's finding little things to do. And I went and did the broadcasting boot camp this off season to see if it's something I'm going to go into. I'm going to do the pre-games for the Patriot game, pre-game and post-games with NBC, the local NBC there. So that should be fun and just give me a taste of what that's like. And what I kind of told myself and my wife and I talked about it is, you know what, do everything at this point and see what you like and figure it out from there.
Well, you're going to kill it. You really are. And five kids. You're in Nashville, right?
Nashville, yep.
How'd you land there for keeps? You're actually Los Angeles area kid. You grew up. So why Tennessee?
You know what? We were here for 2 years with the Tennessee Titans. We fell in love with the community. There's zero state tax. That's always a good thing, right? But at the same time, what you're able to get here versus California or anywhere else is pretty special. Mm-hmm. And the kids fell in love with school and everything. And as you're raising a family and as you want to, you know, put them in the best situation to succeed and enjoy their childhood, we thought this was an incredible place to raise a family. And so we settled here and it's been great for us. And we've had a great time and we've met a lot of great people. And like I said, the community is incredible.
It was great to see you a few weeks back when we were down for training camp. And I'm wondering, what are your impressions that you have right now of where the Patriots are as a team and mostly on offense as well?
Right. It's always really interesting when you go into like a practice setting and you watch, because obviously a lot of the receivers were out. We didn't have I think that they were down to two or three receivers.
Yeah, it was just Gunner and Braxton and no tight end.
Exactly. The tight end situation's kind of up in the air right now with everything going on with the suspension for Ben Watson and everybody else. But at the same time, with Josh Gordon coming back, Julian going to be ready for the start of the season, and Demaryius Thomas, I think that they've got a really good group of receivers that they're going to be able to go out, and Josh McDaniels does an incredible job. Sony Michel, I think, is an outstanding running back. He proved that last year, and I think he's just going to get better with time. And I watched that third preseason game against Carolina, who's a stout defense mm-hmm. and known for having incredible speed and everything, and I thought they did a great job up front of running the ball downhill into a penetrating defense. And so I think as long as that offensive line will give Tom just a little bit of time, they'll be able to run the ball. There's no doubt about that.
That's the biggest thing. Yeah,
that's the biggest thing.
You know, but this is, if you're Tom, if you were you, and you are, dealing with a season where, Josh Gordon at his best is a pretty good player. But there's
no doubt.
Conditioning. Demaryius Thomas at his best has been, you know, an all-pro level player. Julian at his best, which he probably will approach, is a very good player. Philip Dorsett at his best is okay. You don't know what you're going to get from Jacoby Myers. You don't know. If you were entering this game against Pittsburgh and you had those guys, N'Keal Harry's out, and you said to yourself, man, I really don't know what we have. Is that a disconcerting feeling for a quarterback to go onto the into the season with?
Well, the interesting part is throughout the course of the season, no matter what game you're on, you're going to have injuries to some of those main guys, and you're just basically got to figure out a way of what your best game plan is to approach it. Now, I'm sure that there's, you know, concern, this, that, and the other. But you can't ever talk about that and worry about that as a quarterback, because that takes you away from really concentrating on what you need to do. And I'm sure that there's different ways the formation, you know, the Patriots are one of the best teams in the league, and they have been for forever, ever since I've been there, of formationing people, creating matchups on the inside, understanding coverage based on, wait, we're going to put three receivers over here. If all the cornerbacks are over there, we know it's man coverage, mm-hmm. and get us into the best play possible. So there, within that scheme, there's going to be ways to dictate the flow of the game for them offensively. You know, establishing the run's going to be a big part of this game, I think. And also that sets up their play action. And obviously it's good. There's question marks without a doubt when you lose a guy like Gronkowski, who's been there and been a go-to guy for so long. But at the same time, we've seen time and time again throughout the years that Josh McDaniels, Coach Belichick, and that whole entire staff do an incredible job of finding the weak spots of an opponent, attacking that weak spot and making them make the adjustment to what you're doing, rather than you needing to make the adjustment to what they're doing.
What does Bill Belichick spend this week doing with the team? I mean, you've gone through training camp, you've gone through preseason, you're down to your 53 guys, 45 guys, practice squad, all that shit. But what is his tone like? Is he urgent or is he calm? How did he work with you guys?
Coach is consistent now.
What a horrible question. What a terrible. Can I just interject? What a bad question. I just couldn't spit the friggin' thing out.
The fact of the matter is, like, you see it week in and week out. The most amazing part about Coach Belichick, there's no like highs and lows. It's this steady, stoic man all the time. And what he's always going to do as a great head coach that he is hold everybody accountable. He's going to make you understand what the game plan is, the insides and outs on both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. There's going to be keys to success on both sides of the ball, right? Offensively, we need to establish the run game. We got to take care of Cameron Hayward. We've got to do these things in order for us to be successful offensively. If we do these things, we will be successful offensively. Same thing defensively. Contain Roethlisberger. Don't let him get outside the pocket and make those big plays. You know what I mean? Juju Smith. He's another guy that we know that he's their number one guy now. And mm-hmm. they've got a lot of younger receivers out there now, which is, it's a different group than what it's been in the past. But at the same time, they led the league in passing last year, and I don't see them going away from their passing game. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So what he's going to do is lay out all the factors. He's going to have them as prepared as possible. And then come game day, the beauty about playing in that system is come game day, you completely understand what you need to accomplish and also the game plan in front of you. And hopefully, as long as you do what you need to do during the week of preparation, you're going to go out there and just be able to play free.
All right, I'm going to veer for a second here, Matt, and I hope you don't mind this.
No.
We work in a very small room. It's probably about 6x9. And there's a desk here, and there's three of us here. This guy, Phil Perry, does a great job for us. You might have met him or spoken to him at some point in the past. Ryan, who's the podcast director here. And me, and someone just made a smell in this room, and it's going to make it harder for us to do the job for a minute.
Yeah, I can understand that. Sorry.
So we're working under duress. What do you have?
Maybe we need to mix in a window or something like that. Fan.
This is no. It's that media room. You remember the media? No, we didn't have the media room. This one when you were there.
Tight quarters.
Yep, it's tight in here, and it's the little holding cells, but we're lucky to have them.
There you go.
Which makes me, like, you don't know what to say. I'm not a big fan of saying fart. I just don't like it. So it's What do the Castle kids use for making breaking wind? What's the
we
word?
We try
there?
To use pass gas. Uh-huh. You know, we tried that or toot. You know, we do
two,
that.
Yeah, we were two people.
The funny part is you're amongst all a bunch of adults and your kid comes by and says, "Dad, I just farted." And then you correct them and say, "No, you mean you tooted." And then they all start going, "Yeah, that's really funny." And I'm sitting there just like, really? I can't even, my kid can say it, but I can't. I'm telling him to say toot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how we go.
Every parent has to go through that at some point is, what are we going to call this? You know, when I was growing up, we had to go through made a smell.
Oh, yeah.
Made a all smell. Right. We had to have a three word. I think I just made a smell. Did you make a smell?
I made it. See? That fits that. You know what? I might even start using that.
A manufactured stink.
You didn't do any of that. You just made a smell. A really bad one.
Hey, get this. Antonio Brown, I don't know if you're up to date on this news as it breaks today, but you know, he was disciplined for the whole foolishness that happened out in Oakland. And his helmet ridiculousness and the feet and everything else. Well, he posted a fine letter yesterday on Instagram complaining about it. Mike Mayock, Raiders GM, confronted him about it. And apparently there was a screaming match that ensued. Antonio Brown began to approach him, was held back, punted a football, and said, "Fine me for that, too." He didn't fine him. Mayock didn't. He's actually suspended him. So, two-tiered question. One, what's the most outrageous outburst you've seen by a player toward a coach in your 14 years in the league?
Oh, dude, you're putting me on the spot, and it's hard to call out players when that happens.
Well, you could just say player X did X.
Okay, player X did this. We're in a team meeting. Okay, the head coach is talking, and it's after a loss, and so we're talking and everything like that, and he's just basically addressing the team like, "Look, we gotta do this week. We gotta get back. We gotta get to work. This and the other. Do we have any questions?" It's a rhetorical question. Nobody needs the answer at all. Player X is sitting on the side with a hoodie on, and Player X stands up and says, "No, I'm not effing good." And just starts going off. I mean, and starts pointing. He's like, "No, I'm not good because of you and you and you," and starts pointing at all the coaches. And I'm like, I'm sitting close, and I'm like, "Gosh, I am super uncomfortable right now." And then
he starts slinking away.
Right. And now coach is a little taken back by it. He's like, "All right, if we're going to open this door up, then let's open up Pandora's box. And does anybody else have anything to say?" Well, another player X in front, who's been fined a whole bunch this season for being late to meetings and stuff, says, "I'm with him." And coach says, "Do you want to, you know, expand on that?" And he goes, "No, I'm just with him." And then we have other people stand up. Now we get a screaming match between a linebacker and a safety about how he checked out of a play. It was supposed to be man coverage, and he checked cover two because he didn't want to guard anybody. It was just an absolute disaster. I've never been a part of a team meeting that's ever been a part of it. And it was screaming, yelling, flipping. I mean, it was wild.
That's unbelievable. See, now that's the kind of stuff that if you could get Hard Knocks cameras on that shit, that would just go over huge.
Oh, man. Are you kidding me? That's Emmy award-winning stuff.
All that said, would the Patriots ever consider, because they have some wide receiver limitations at the moment, a player like Antonio Brown? They could. Now, his contract would travel with him just the way it's structured.
Right.
So if the Oakland Raiders release him, he's going to have an insane amount of money hit their cap unless they can somehow say conduct detrimental and we're taking the money back, whatever. But in theoretically, would the Patriots ever entertain a player like that? I have an opinion, too. I want to hear yours, because you played with guys here in New England who could be tough to deal with in 08.
There's no doubt. I mean, that's a tough call right there because of everything that took place, obviously, this offseason with what was said in the media and all that leading up to him signing with Oakland, and then everything that's gone on since he's been in Oakland. And it would just be, as you can only imagine, the distraction coming into the building and everybody having to address the elephant in the room. That's it's a tough call. At the same time, like you said, we've all seen it throughout the years that there's been guys that a lot of other organizations have written off and felt like that they were a problem, and they've come to the New England Patriots, and because of the environment, because of the leadership within that building, that they kind of fall in line and they're able to go out and perform on the field and resurrect their career and also their reputation at times because of what that culture is there. You know what I mean? And so I guess I never would say that it's not a possibility. At the same time, I would have to think it's a real long shot.
I think what's interesting, and this is something Scott Pioli told me, you know, during the period of time when you were with the team and there were guys who were signed, like, and I think it was relative to Corey Dillon. He said every problem he has had has been related to football in some way or another. His disappointment with the game, or the way he was being used, or the amount of reps he was getting, or the players around him. His point, and it was somewhat true with Randy Moss as well. You know, Randy Moss bumped a meter maid, and you know, Corey Dillon had things that he did in college which didn't reflect well on him at all. But generally speaking, their irritations were related to the success of the football team. Meanwhile, Antonio Brown's going 117, you know, in a 55. He's launching furniture out of the top of a Miami condo that's almost hitting a grandfather and his grandson. It's ongoing. This stuff that he gets involved in is not related to football. That's why I think he would be a difficult fit. Your thoughts?
I think that's a great point. I mean, there's obviously more issues than just on the field and being upset about a helmet and this, that, and the other. If there's stuff related to off the field issues, that's when it starts to become more of an issue and definitely a concern, I would think, from a front office standpoint. Like you said, you brought up two great points. I played with both Corey Dillon and Randy Moss, who some people would say, you know, like you said, that they had issues, problems, whatever it might be. At the same time, I'll tell you this, both of those teammates were two unbelievable teammates. And Corey Dillon worked his butt off and was a great guy in the locker room, laughed, this, that, and the other. And yes, we were having success, so maybe that changed the dynamic of it. And Randy, another guy who came in and worked his butt off and was a great guy, brought a lot of laughs, was a good guy in the locker room. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is, just because somebody does have this reputation on the outside, it doesn't mean that they're you should just write them off and say that they're absolutely awful. At the same time, the off the field stuff is very concerning when it comes to that kind of stuff, because now you're talking about a little bit more than just football and in a job.
Hey, you know what? We've been doing this for like 25 minutes and I was only going to go 10 to 15.
Much fun though.
I know, it's been great. Last thing before I let you go, buddy, give me the quick and dirty outlook for Sunday night with the Steelers.
I think it's going to be a heck of a game, to be honest. Like, you never know. Going into this first game, there's so much excitement, and there's that anxiety of really not knowing. As a quarterback, at least, I always remember these openers are funny games because you could watch as much preseason as you want, but really you got to go back to the year before. Has the coordinator changed, which it obviously hasn't. So they're still going to be in the same kind of structure. You've got to recognize new players that are on the field. I know that they drafted the rookie 55. I forget his name right now. The Steelers did at that linebacker position, who I think is a heck of a player, but there's going to be some minor wrinkles and this, that, and the other. So it's kind of the fear of the unknown when you go in that game. Mm-hmm. And it's also the fact that you've got to eliminate, everybody talks about it, right? You definitely got to play smart football, not turn over the ball, eliminate penalties, do all that. But I think that also the Patriots have proven time and time again that they're a really, really hard team to beat at home. And they've got a comfort level there, and they've been doing it for so long. Last year, I think that they didn't even lose a home game. So
no,
I think the Patriots are going to come out on top, and I think that they're going to do it. I love their defense this year.
I'm thinking this thing's going to be a rock fight, because the Patriots have some offensive limitations right now. They are trying to sort things out. And Pittsburgh is going to go against, as you were just about to say, one of the best defenses in the NFL. I think it's going to be low scoring.
I think it's going to be I definitely don't think it's going to be one of those that we've seen in the past where Patriots are throwing up 35 and everything like that on them. But I do think it's going to be an interesting battle. And I think that they're both going to be feeling it out as the first quarter goes on and trying to both of them. I think the Patriots are going to come out and probably try to establish the run early, wear that big defensive line down a little bit, and maybe get into that no huddle offense that has been really successful for them and push the tempo on them a little bit.
All right, Matthew, this was unbelievably entertaining.
It's been a pleasure, boys.
Get back to those five. We will talk to you. Maybe talk to you Tuesday. Maybe we'll get you in a little earlier in the week. Pardon me, after the game, so we can shoot the breeze about what we saw and what we can expect. Sound good?
That sounds great.
All right,
I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right. Take care, Matt.
See you, bye.
That's Matt Cassel. He's going to be on your pregame live and postgame live, and he's going to be on the Patriots Talk podcast all season long. When we come back, we're going to clean up some items with, of course, Senator Phil Perry, because he is a staple of the pod, and we always need to hear his voice. Be right back. All right, Phil, talking to Matt Cassel was a blast, but I need to get back to my guy. So, ladies and gentlemen, right now we're going to turn our attention toward the weekend. Phil, how you doing?
Doing great. Ready for a game. I'm ready to talk some football, some actual X's and O's, breaking down the matchups. I love this stuff.
I like football.
Like football.
I like football and everything that goes
everything,
with it.
Everything that goes with it.
I sat down and wrote a column yesterday about the Patriots' last loss being to the Steelers. And then 1,000 words later, I still don't know what the friggin' point of the column was. I need a game.
I could tell you what the point of the column was.
What?
Point of the Calm was that's where things started to turn for them. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And we were all so down on the Steelers after that loss that the fact that they came back and did what they did now makes us all very wary that even when there are a lot of questions about this team this year, we're still all picking them to win the Super Bowl just because it's the Patriots. And it's like, well, yeah. What do you want me to do?
Yeah. I don't know. It's a good Felger right there. Wow. As we turn our attention to the game itself, I want to get into a zinging and zanging situation where you and I look at three different keys to the game. And the first key I want to talk about is the ability or inability for the Patriots to go tempo. Home game, you'd usually like to see them ratchet up the speed a little bit and get those matchups where they make sure the Steelers personnel is stuck on the field because they're going so fast. But when I asked Tom Brady about it on Wednesday, this was his response.
I'd say it's a pretty hard thing to do in general in the NFL over a long season because there's a limited roster size. There's obviously a lot of new players you're trying to incorporate. There's a lot of conditioning aspects that come into, you know, 45 active players on the roster. You know, when I was at Michigan a few years ago, they had five tight ends in there at the game at one point, and then they ran them off and they ran five receivers on, and those aren't a part of pro football. So in general, the times we've done it, it's been great for us, but I think you've also got to, you know, it's a long game, it's a long season, and, you know, it's a challenge. Yeah. It's a challenge.
So the Patriots might have to table that aspect of their offense until they get better conditioning and a little bit more depth at some key spots.
I'm with you 100%, especially when you have one healthy tight end, essentially, and Ryan Izzo, and you're not even really sure what he can do in a regular season situation. And I also look at the Steelers, Tom, as not a great team maybe to tempo against. Mm-hmm. Because typically when the Patriots do that, it's because they've found good matchups at the linebacker level to take advantage of either with their tight ends or their running backs in the passing game. This doesn't feel like a great game for them to target either of those positions to me. I just think the Steelers are really athletic at the second level, and if Mark Barron's on the field 100% of the time, you might want to go tempo just to run it.
Maybe run it down his throat.
But the passing game tempo that I think we're used to seeing from them might not be a factor.
You know what? I don't know. Do teams ever do running game tempo action? I just made up that phrase, like running game tempo action.
Sure.
Like that.
Yeah, of course.
But the play is different, and you have to unstack afterwards.
You do. But if you have a matchup on the field that you like and you don't allow them to substitute, that's the whole idea.
But passing game tempo is easier to do because it's line up, throw. There's not a million bodies on the
ground. There's not seven linemen stacked on top of each other at the line of scrimmage every play. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
What's your first key that you want to look at?
I want to look at the Patriots running game first and foremost because I think that's going to be, I hesitate to say their only way of moving the football, but I don't see them moving it through the air great unless it's to Julian Edelman. And so I'm seeing a lot of Sony Michel, and I'm seeing a lot of maybe even extra offensive linemen because you don't have Dwayne Allen anymore and you do only have Ryan Izzo. And I'm wondering if the Patriots are going to be able to run against a defense that last year was a top 10 defense in terms of rush yards per game allowed and rush yards allowed per attempt in the Steelers. So it's sort of strength on strength, in my opinion, there.
It's going to be interesting to see just how often they're able to do, kind of linking back to what I said and what you're saying, can they get that matchup against those smaller linebackers? We saw what James Devlin did in the Super Bowl to Mark Barron, just absolutely plastered him. We saw what the Patriots did to the Rams in the Super Bowl. You spent all week talking about how small they were up front, and they spent the whole night picking face masks out of their sternums because of it. So it's the Patriots running game kind of strength on strength. And I want to keep there with my second key a little bit because the Steelers offensive line is so talented. They have, you know, Marquise Pouncey, Villanueva, Ramon Foster, DeCastro, a feller named Matt Feller is at right tackle. Mm. But how will the Patriots try and work against that? Juwan Bentley will be the inside linebacker, you think, but will we see less Jamie Collins? Will we see a lineup of 3-4, 4-3? How do they come out defensively? Is Winovich going to play as much as we think he might? Is Hightower going to be on the edge? Are the Patriots going to be in a position where they try to dictate to the offense as opposed to being reactive. And I think that they did do that a fair amount at the end of 2018. They were a defense that actually could dictate to offenses because of their talent and their attacking style. Can they do that in this game?
I'll be fascinated to see that as well, especially how they deploy their personnel. Are they going to go and sell out to stop the pass the way they did really in week 15 last year in Pittsburgh? It was all about stopping Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown. Meanwhile, Jalen Samuels ran for 142 yards. So they could, and that was by design in some ways. Obviously, you don't want to be that bad against the run. But do they do that again where they're so focused on stopping Ben Roethlisberger that they allow James Conner to have a huge day? I would focus one of my second key here, one of my three keys, is going to be how the Patriots do plan to attack this Steelers passing game, because spoke to some people in the locker room this week. They said basically without Antonio Brown, the one game we have to look at is week 17 last year when they essentially held Antonio Brown out of that game for conduct detrimental, I think is what we would call it. But Juju Smith-Schuster was on the outside primarily, Tom, not in the slot. Ryan Switzer got a lot of run. Eli Rogers got a lot of run. He's not a part of the mix there anymore. But to me, it looks like Stephon Gilmore matched up on Juju Smith-Schuster, number one on number one, is going to be the matchup that we see a lot of. And I really like Stephon Gilmore in that matchup. You look at last year, Gilmore against a bigger, powerful, talented receiver, Davante Adams, 6'1", 215, held him to two catches for 15 yards. Juju Smith-Schuster, 6'1", 215. Probably a little bit more physical, but I still think it's a good matchup for Gilmore.
Yeah, and not quite as fast. And I think Gilmore is one of the stronger guys in the league, as you saw so often, really even in this preseason when the Patriots practiced. He's just sticky as hell. Does not get shrugged off. Finally, I'm curious to see how the Patriots' defensive operation works. Who is signaling in the plays? Who is calling the plays? Are they as attack style as they were last year? Is that going to carry over? Or did Brian Flores take that action with him to Miami? Philly, your third.
Last one for me is just when the Patriots are forced to go to the air, and I think they will be, even though there is that light front for the Steelers, and even though I do think it'll be run heavy, where do they go? We know they'll go to Julian Edelman. You want to hear some Julian Edelman against the Steelers stats?
Of course I do.
Last four meetings against the Steelers, 35 catches, 365 yards. That's pretty good. Mike Hilton, their slot corner, good, not great. Allowed 1.3 yards per coverage snap in the slot last year, which was fifth worst among regular slot corners in football in 2018. So that's a matchup that the Patriots are going to try to exploit. But then who's your number two? It's not going to be Ryan Izzo. We've talked about the athletic linebackers that the Steelers have. I don't think it's going to be the running backs. Josh Gordon is somebody that I think is going to get a lot of looks from Tom Brady, even though he hasn't been around, even though he might not be in great shape. He's just so explosive. He's so physically imposing. 18 yards per catch last year. It really didn't take him long to get up to speed in this passing offense. I think he'll be targeted a bunch. Steven Nelson is a corner that the Steelers signed from the Chiefs last year, a guy that Brady targeted early and often in the AFC Championship game last year and had a lot of success. If you see Nelson on Gordon, I think that's a matchup Brady will go to.
Phil, unbelievably great entertainment today. The podcast, I'm sure, was unbelievably great entertainment for you because we had Matt Cassel for 23 minutes, and we just had Phil for the last 10. Of course, what we always need from you guys is for you to subscribe if you haven't already, and we're happy to have that. And also,
rating.
Yeah, that's right.
Five stars.
Rating. Five stars, please. Yep. Five stars. Four with constructive criticism.
Yeah,
anything
comment.
Less than four with kind of a dick comment, let's lay off that, okay?
Please. Just pocket those.
Pocket those.
Maybe send them to us on Twitter if you really feel the need. We can handle it there.
I mean, I sat down last night after playing two basketball games in the Raynham Athletic Club playoffs. I was pretty tired.
Just lighten it up.
Went to get a pizza at Harry's afterwards. You know,
shout out Harry's.
Sit down, open Twitter, hit the notifications. First notification, STFU, Tom. I'm like, what did I even do? You know, it's just the first thing. It's a drain. It's a drain.
Well, listen,
so, be that as it
when
may.
You've
so
got as many
you don't
takes
have to
as
send
you
them
have.
Out. Yeah, I do. I'm a takesy Tom.
Take guy.
Hey, takey Tom. All right, folks, appreciate you very much. We will be back at it again next Tuesday. Enjoy the season opener and the first week of National Football League action.
Woo!
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.